The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
This was supposed to be the last thing we'd cover in this half hour with Esther O'Moore Donoghue and Owen McDermott, the Thai rescue. Yes. But one of the extraordinary things about it, Owen, as well, is we just heard there from Tom about the fact that we had this man in Clare who participated and helped in the rescue. But the tourism authorities in Thailand, or the authorities, plan to turn the cave apparently into an adventure tourism site.
Yeah, I think it's probably one of those where you'd have to look at it and say, is it a bit too soon, considering actually
what?
A man lost his life trying to save these young boys, and thankfully they have been saved. And it's a bit opportunistic. And I was thinking about this, and if you look, for example, Ireland's second most visited tourist attraction is the Titanic Visitor Centre in Belfast. They chose to wait a year or 100 years before they would put this in, rather than 2 or 3 weeks or 2 or 3 days since these boys have been fed. And I think there has to be that consideration that A life was lost, and B, how soon is too soon? And if we take the Titanic as the example, they waited over 100 years.
Because even last night, Esther, we were chatting on this programme about the fact that early movie producers have already arrived, even before they completed the rescue of the boys. Movie producers there were trying to negotiate so how they could do the sort of their dramatisation of what had happened.
I know, I mean, it's a sign of the times. Like, there's no pause for consideration or, as Owen was saying, kind of reflection. It's like, let's dive in there, let's strike when the iron's hot, let's get a screenplay out, let's get, like, merchandise, let's brand this.
Hang on, I haven't heard anyone with the merchandise idea yet.
Maybe
you might be onto something.
I've got some patents pending in Thailand. But I mean, I suppose the adventure tourism industry is a huge industry. It's worth $250 billion worldwide. And in Ireland alone, the tourism sector is worth $8.7 billion. So they're trying to get in there. I mean, does it show any tact? No, it doesn't. But
can you imagine the ideas? I suppose, are they going to try and do, well, go on your adventure holiday in Thailand and then take the big risk at the end, go into the flooded caves, see if you can avoid being detained there
like the Crystal Maze or something like that. Yeah, yeah, some sort of, yeah. Well, the Chiang governor, Narangsak Osat Thanakorn, said that the cave is going to be turned into like a living museum, and there's going to be exhibits, and they're going to tell the story of how the rescue came about, and they'll have, you know, the suits that were used, etc. That's what he says.
Well, I guess there's always going to be the worry of, and not to jar, but will they be able to get back out when you've gone in to visit it, considering the boys got in? I guess it's one of those perfect stories, though, because it had a beginning, middle and an end, and it was a happy ever after ending to it. And if you consider the amount of attention 12 boys in a cave get, and then if you
but
look,
it was
for
a
example,
good news story, and there were so many people got involved and tried to rescue them. But then there are people pointing out as well, why do we not have the same degree of interest in, for example, children drowning in the Mediterranean as
Precisely.
They're trying to gain access to Europe?
Precisely, and the hundreds of thousands of young children who die of starvation on a weekly basis. I think if you were to look at that, I think part of it is because if you look at the Thai boy story, there was always going to be an ending to it. It was short, like every good story. It wasn't overloaded with too many characters. There were 12 of them. There were a coach. There were these heroes coming in. So it was almost a perfect ingredients to a story. I think the other stuff, there's too many people. It's too far away. We don't really care.
Yeah, it was manageable, and you can't. There's no kind of baddie or goodies. It was very straightforward. It was like, let's get our boys out there, you know, and people can kind of digest that.
Of course, when Roe McDermott was with us last night, and also Brian Lloyd in the movies, they were suggesting that when it comes to the movie, that there'll probably be what they call Hollywood whitewashing involved, that this will turn out to be a group of American tourists who happen to go to Thailand. Everyone will speak perfect English rather than have been about the story of the Thai boys.
Yeah, I mean, quite possibly. What there was a film a few years ago about the tsunami. And
that's right, we were discussing that, The Impossible.
Yeah, yeah.
Which all became about the white family who was caught up in it.
Yeah, well, no doubt. We'll like just watch this space. I mean, have they made the film on the Chilean miners yet? Did that ever come to light?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, that was...
But again, you see, I think I had almost forgotten about the Chilean miners. And if you look at it, I think that's how the stories just move, and we're just churning through so much data and information that we forget of these. And I think it won't be too long until, for example, this Thai crisis and success will probably be quickly forgotten if they don't make a movie that'll make it last forever.
Now, one of the stories we enjoyed, I suppose you could say, the most during the week when Christine Bone and Declan Parr was with us, was the missing submachine gun. Now, one of the most extraordinary stories. Now, I see the new Lord Mayor of Dublin, Niall Ring, wants to bring the woman who handed in the gun to the Mansion House to personally thank her. But do you think, Esther, we're ever going to find out the real truth as to what happened, what sort of bungling went on here, that a submachine gun in a bag could have been lost by the Gardaí? They were supposed to believe that it somehow bounced out of the boot of a car.
Well, we were told that it was understood the strap of the bag containing the weapon was stopped the closing mechanism of the boot of the car, and the button was pressed and it
fell out. Which would flash up on the dashboard and you would have a beeping sound to tell you that the boot hadn't closed properly before you drove off.
I mean, is it beyond the beyonds to mislay a heckler and cosh MP7 submachine gun, Matt? I mean, are you being a bit unfair? I mean, I don't know, how did it end up? And it was such a weird fluke of events. A woman was driving down the other way on Cuff Street, saw this bag, picked it up. And I mean, initially, the reports were blurred. We were told that she was sitting on the loose with a submachine gun and she brought it to Storseat guard station. But it turns out again...
Never looked inside the bag to see what was there apparently either.
And was, yeah.
Well, and that she could get out of the car and that members of An Garda Síochána couldn't get out of the car, so they mustn't.
And how much busy traffic was there at 5 o'clock in Dublin City Central that somebody just pulls in the car, stops the car, and stops the traffic and picks up a bag?
I'd like, though, if I could, to build on what the Lord Mayor has said, because part of what he talked about was, yes, we can talk about how grave an incident this is, or yes, we can talk about how embarrassing it is for members of An Garda Síochána, but these guys were the emergency response unit on their way to fighting one of the biggest drug wars that certainly Ireland has seen, is probably one of the biggest drug wars in Europe. So I think, yes, we can look and say, yeah, it's embarrassing and probably they should have known. But there has been huge amounts of work done by An Garda Síochána to keep this thing and keep an element of a lid on it that I wouldn't think we
should forget
about.
Yeah, but if they get praise for that, and they're due all sorts of praise, shouldn't they also be condemned for this idiocy?
Yeah, but I don't think they're getting... I think they're only getting praise off the back of this. And I think we collectively seem to be okay that there's a kind of a war going on 2 kilometres down the road and we don't really talk about it too much and we let the guards kind of try and sort it out, where I think we should be really praising them as much as we can.
Okay, let's move on. And Esther, explain the Plain B Twitter romance.
First of all, Matt, it's Plain B.
Plain what?
Plain Bay. It's pronounced Bay. Plain Bay. Okay. Yeah. Okay. This is hashtag Plain Bay. There is an Instagrammer called, she's an actress as well. She describes herself as an actress, Rosie Blair. She was boarding a flight. She wanted to sit beside her boyfriend. So she asked the woman in front of her, can we swap seats? So she ended up sitting with her boyfriend. These two strangers were sitting in front of her. So what Rosie decided to do, she put the narrative in her own head that these guys were flirting and falling in love. And she live tweeted the entire thing. And first of all, I mean, it came up on my Twitter feed. I love this story. This is such a great story. And then, of course, I just know, you know, we've been through this a million times. I know in 70 minutes time, someone's going to have another hot take and flip it all around and everyone's going to hate this woman. So I don't agree with what this woman did. People are entitled to privacy. It was an invasion of privacy. She was putting her own kind of construction on this. I mean, people have said maybe the woman didn't want to talk to this guy, and the fact that she's gone underground and doesn't want to be identified publicly, whereas the man involved in the interaction has been on USA Today and has... posing on Instagram with no socks on, looking into the middle distance, kind of capitalising on this. But yeah, it's kind of come down to, you know, is everything you come across on a daily basis content? Is that what we've been kind of trained and brainwashed to do through reality show? We see people on reality shows like doing things that we have done historically in private for many years, having sex on Love Island. People are doing that on screen now. You know, going to the bathroom, people just do that on Geordie Shore. They don't care. And so we kind of forget that these are real people and they're entitled to their privacy, and we shouldn't just like stream people's lives or screen capture people's text messages and put them on Twitter, etc., as like something that's a bit gas.
Totally, but the people having sex on Love Island at least decided
that's part of an agreement to do it.
Whereas the notion that somebody can record you and put you up online without your agreement and consent, I think is just as shocking.
But hold on a second, because this has been a thing for newspapers in the past. You can take photographs of anyone on the street and publish them, and it's been very rare occasions in which celebrities in particular have been able to prevent photographs of them going about their daily business and publishing photographs. Now, you can say, well, it's right or wrong or not, but this is a long-running issue.
Yeah, but if you look at also, though, and compare Twitter and Facebook to newspapers, Matt, at least a newspaper had to have an element of responsibility because it was
public
a publisher.
Interest.
And it's a publisher, whereas if you look, for example, at Twitter and Facebook, they take no responsibility for the stuff that's put up there, truthful or not, private or not. And I think, for example, if we look, and not to bring everything back to Donald Trump and Brexit, but if you look at Donald Trump and Brexit, it is the likes of Facebook and Twitter are in some place responsible for that, because of they are allowing people to put stuff up and use them as a publisher without taking any of the responsibility. So I think it's an invasion of privacy in this case, but it's again this wider issue around Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, that you're kind of allowed to put up of anything you want, and they don't have any influence over it because they're not responsible for it.
Yeah, and you get all sorts of examples, and things are coming to my mind now just as we talk of things that have happened, say, for example, in fast food restaurants or pubs late night when people get involved in altercations, maybe not physical, but I remember thinking of some teenage girls saying things became a big national story.
I know, because there's things can be just disseminated so quickly as well. So it's not just like a gas story that you might have put up, I don't know, on Bebo or something. I don't know how we wouldn't even, the concept of sharing things like that wouldn't even have occurred 10 years ago, but it's just like can reach such a huge audience so quickly and people's lives can be changed.
Totally,
forever.
And the people need to take an element of responsibility on it. I do think, going back, I think the large organisations who put this stuff up need to take responsibility, but we all should consider the stuff we put up online.
There's another story connected to that, and it's not about Irish Rail, so Barry Kenny can rest easily in relation to this, but this was one of the railway networks in the UK where there was a person posted about being refused access to the first class carriage by Southern Rail. The boss of Southern Rail actually was sitting there. He put his bags on the seat so nobody else could sit in it, and others were left in the next carriage standing. But it's not necessarily quite that straightforward.
No, it's
story,
not. And like, I think there's probably had been a PR opportunity to do the right thing missed by Mr. Mark Boone, but I don't think he's necessarily done anything wrong. People were criticising for kicking people out of first class and down into the other carriages. But I think if we go back, and or if somebody who's, for example, boarding a flight to New York tomorrow, if they suddenly sit in first class and say, well, I noticed there was some empty seats here, I'm going to sit here for the rest of the journey, I think the cabin crew would have some questions and want to escort them off. I think there's an equivalence of that in the train. If people wanted to sit in first class, they should have bought a ticket or upgraded them to it. So I don't think he's done anything wrong. Do I think he missed an opportunity to present a good image of his train line and show a good image of his organisation? Absolutely. He could have done a very nice thing and given his own seat up. He could have bought people tickets. He could have allowed everybody to come up. He missed that opportunity, but I don't think he did anything wrong.
Yeah, because apparently there were empty seats in other carriages.
I know. I mean, I think they're pretty strict on their divisions of class on trains in London. I've travelled them before. And sometimes you sit down in first class, you don't realise, and you're asked to move, and you're like, oh, fair enough. But this woman, she said the train was late. They say it was 6 minutes late, so technically it still is late. He paid for a first class ticket, or he was in, you know, if you want to sit in the first class cabin, then you pay extra money. But again, it could be an opportunity for better PR because people are not happy with the Go via Thameslink service. Anyway, people are protesting and they're asking for the rail line to lose their franchise. And the British Transport Minister, Chris Gayling, has said that he will revoke their franchise in 2 weeks if they don't get their schedules.
Okay, thanks to listener who decided to tell Esther that the 33 is the name of the movie made about the Chilean miners. It had Antonio Banderas in it and apparently also Gabriel Byrne.
Wonderful. I'm going to watch it this weekend. I can't wait. Yeah.
Okay. I wonder if it was Gabriel Byrne speaking in Spanish and that. Okay. Will you be watching the World Cup final on Sunday? Because you just asked us off air, when was it on?
That is true. But I think I should get points for knowing that Croatia and France are playing each other.
Why should you get points for knowing that?
You're right, why should I? I should know that already.
What do you make of FIFA warning broadcasters 2 games from the end of the tournament, because there is the third and fourth place playoff tomorrow as well, to stop cutaways into the crowd of hot women, as it has been described?
What is a hot woman, Matt? A woman who needs to take off a jumper or something, or someone who's attractive? We don't know, but we'll say they're zooming in on physically attractive women. But this is not really, this is not official policy of FIFA. It comes from the anti-discrimination group Fair Network, who've been working with FIFA to monitor behaviour, antisocial behaviour such as homophobia and racism. And they have discovered that there's been more than 30 cases of mainly Russian women being accosted in the streets by male fans. And they've been working with FIFA to impose sanctions on fans who don't behave themselves. And the Federation's diversity boss Federico Adiechi said they've been working with local organisers to crack down on this. And he was asked then, he'd been working with broadcasters to stop telling them not to zoom in on.
Yeah. There was one famous clip of a female journalist, and let's see, some guy ran up to her, I think it was in Red Square, trying to take a kiss off her while she was on screen, and she pushed him away and told him where to go.
Yeah, and you see,
And that's happened multiple times. That's not the only instance within the World Cup, yeah.
Yeah, and I kind of read that and I watched that, and I then kind of thanked God that maybe Irish fans weren't in Russia this year, because Irish fans have done very similar things when we're away. So, for example, there was video shared on men's sites of Irish fans singing songs to a female reporter and proposing to her. Now, she seemed to take it in the fun of the moment, but again, that could be quite intimidating thing. There was videos of Irish fans cheering women leaving Victoria's Secret shops.
In Copenhagen during the playoff last year.
So you're kind of looking at that saying, oh, well, and then everyone said, oh, we sure just having fun. Well, there was 100 of you and you were all drunk and there was a woman leaving the shop.
But I can't get over, what's the obsession with TV broadcasters showing shots of the crowd during a match? I want to watch what's going on the pitch. If I go to a match, I'm not looking around to see what everyone else looks like while the action is taking place on the pitch. So why are we giving shots of the crowds on television?
They've decided the attractive men and women of Moscow at the pitch are more interesting than what's going on. I think if you look, though, how TV or in sport is produced and presented, I think there's often a lot of sexism in it. Like if you watch American football, for example, let's bring out the cheerleaders and entertain the predominantly male attendees. You look, go to boxing matches, they still have ring girls who go around showing the number of the round going in. So there is that link of how do we present sport, and thankfully GAA hasn't gone there, but you can see it with other sports and the production of these soccer matches in Russia.
Okay, moving on. And Esther, tell us the story from Spain of the man banned from public service jobs because of a decade of doing what?
Well, yeah, the civil servant is banned from taking public office for 9 years because for 10 years he did not show up to work. He did show up to work. He clocked in at 7:30, then he would go home or go off and do whatever he wanted to do, and he'd clock back in at 4 o'clock and then sign out and be like, see you later. So he did that for 10 years. So he's, you know, obviously lost his job, etc.
Nobody notice that he wasn't in the office?
It seems that's a particular
type of genius, isn't it?
It is, and I think it is genius. I think it's probably, I kind of find a little sad though too, that nobody noticed that a guy wasn't in work for 10 years. And I think that he talked about how in his interview with Spanish TV, how he worked like a dog so others could reap the rewards of his work. And I wonder, was he a hardworking guy 11 years ago before he comes in? Because I have a view that if you look, for example, in lots of jobs around Ireland, there's probably a lot of people who aren't working, who they're in work but they don't do a whole lot, and part of that you could argue is there's bad management. Did this guy have a manager? Because surely the manager would have noticed that he wasn't there. But that bad management leads to people either physically not turning up or mentally not turning up, where management don't give feedback or don't tell somebody that they're doing well or don't notice the stuff that they're doing. So I think there's probably, this is an extreme example of it, but that actually people's organisations should just hire managers who are pretty good at telling people how they're getting on a regular enough basis.
Esther, tell us please about Stormy Daniels' arrest in recent days. Stormy Daniels, of course, being the porn star and stripper who has alleged that she had a sexual relationship with POTUS.
Yes, indeed. Stormy Daniels, yeah, she was, there's charges brought against her for allegedly touching three undercover detectives while performing at an Ohio strip club, where these charges were dismissed, and the Columbus police said this is part of a long-term investigation into allegations of human trafficking, prostitution and other vice-related violations. But if you put your monocles on and channel your inner Jessica Fletcher, you'd say, why was Stormy Daniels brought up under an Ohio law passed in 2007 that apparently has not been used in over 10 plus years, or hasn't been used very frequently? What could be the possible reason that they might want to intimidate this woman? Could it be possibly that she's suing the President of the United States and his former personal lawyer, Michael Cohen, to be released from a non-disclosure agreement that she signed before his presidential election, alleging that they had an affair? Apparently she was paid $130,000 hush money and she wants to be relieved of this. So could it be that they're trying to send her a message? I mean, who knows? It's a terrible coincidence,
because
I would imagine.
That would be the type of thing you would do in an authoritarian police state, Owen, isn't it? That you would actually, anyone who causes embarrassment to the rulers suddenly gets laws that are not applied to other people brought down upon them in force.
Yes, indeed. There's a fantastic book about Russia called Everything is Possible and Nothing is True that talks a lot about how this is the case within Russia, where the sands are shifting, the goalposts are moving almost on a daily basis, and the strong man, the Tsar at the top, has influence over. There's lots of similarities within this case. Stormy Daniels got off it because the law says that the person has to regularly perform at the club, and because Stormy is on a tour at the minute and doesn't regularly perform there, that's how she got off this.
There's also another bizarre thing to the law as well, though, that the only person allowed to touch a performer such as that is a family member.
Yeah, I can't understand that, and I find that kind of odd, to say the least.
Perhaps we could pass no more comments.
There is
on
also
that.
The big question, though, who's the target market for this? You know, Friday night, who's down the local strip club? It's Stormy Daniels. Let's head down and have a look.
But also the fact that Stormy's not going into that good night quietly. She is, one of the tweets she released before she went on stage was she's wants to perform for her fans and register voters as planned. So she's not going away, and they probably don't like that, and someone wants to keep her quiet.
Funny enough, though, I mean, she had gone quiet in recent months, but inadvertently, this has brought her back to public attention, hasn't it?
Yeah, and perhaps if you were to look at it in one way, that no publicity for Stormy Daniels would be bad publicity. She is on a tour of America called Let's Make America Horny Again, and that is her show title. Okay. And there is an aspect to it that, you know, having the law involved, whether you're a musician or a comedian or a performer, can also help your profile and tee up the rest of your tour.
Esther Moore Donoghue and Owen McDermott, thank you very much for joining us here on The Last Word on Today FM.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.